Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the tribute to Eric Holder. There is a man who will never understand what makes America great because he sees everything through his biases, through his activism eyes and biases. So he will never get it. He will never understand the importance of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And the fact is, you will always have bad players running around in all walks of life, in all colors, in the diversity of the society itself, right? I mean, you can't go to some of these cultures and countries that don't have any diversity and say, oh, well, you know, all, because they have zero diversity. But here in America, where we have such a diverse melting pot, where individual liberty, the principles that were founded that made America great, were individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And you'll always find bad players that rise to the top. And that's because they use the old ploys that Aristotle points out in his book Politics. That's a good read. I would highly recommend that you get it and read it, listen to the audiobook or what have you. Because he points out that during chaotic times, despots always rise to the top. They use demagoguery and they fool most of the people into surrendering their liberties or surrendering power to them. And in America, that should not happen. We're protected for the most part, but we keep on forgetting that we don't have these levels of protection and people just surrender. That's why our education system gets a gold star in dumbing down and making an indolent class of people that we have today. There are too few of us, too few of you out there that understand what the heck's going on. So, as you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only solution-based show that actually puts its arms around the solution in getting the federal government into compliance. That is the key word, compliance to the Constitution. Say it with me. You can do it. Compliance. When we are in compliance to the Constitution, we have no threats in our lives from tyranny, especially from government. So, if you want to call in, by all means, just go ahead and give us a call. But I would just ask that you just send me an email, send me a note, and I will be happy to read your comment. I happened to get a comment from Phil. he didn't think that my tribute to Holder was all that good. And I apologize, Phil. He thought that there were lots of other things. I don't have all the time. This an hour goes pretty quick, but you're right. There are lots of little things out there on Holder regarding his activism and so forth. So I apologize. Maybe today my Bush tribute will be better. And I'm hoping to hear from you, Phil. Anyway, we will be getting into some more news marketing once I go through the tribute to Bush. There's a little more detail because Bush had a much longer and a little more illustrious career than Holder and dabbled in a lot of different things and is considered the father of the New World Order movement, if you know any history on those types of things. So we'll get into all of that. But before we do, let me do a little bit of groveling. I'm looking forward to getting these Red State Coffee ads moving and so forth. It's just that we're all really, really busy. And those folks over at Red State Coffee are really busy as well. But it's coming. And I'm hoping that you're ready to start pulling the trigger in buying some coffee that actually will support this show and support what we're doing. It's not a big support. It's just a small little percentage. But the more coffee you drink, the more support you can give us. And that way, you're still paying for the same price practically for your coffee. Coffee's pretty competitive. So why not just buy your coffee from Red State Coffee? Now, if you don't love your Red State Coffee, let me know. But if you do love it, let me know as well. But anyway, let me move through these things. If you want to support us, there's different ways. You do not have to give us money. It's not all about money. It's about help. It's about getting involved. It's about standing up, taking a stand. Even if you're just standing up and saying, I support Republic Review. I can't do anything, but I support this. And by you endorsing it and getting it out there, just like endorsing the radio show and getting other people to start tuning in, that in itself is a huge help, and we thank you for that. But we do need other help. If you have a way, if you have means of getting involved at your county level or just doing research, if you've got a computer or phone, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We would be honored to have you helping us, and we thank you for thinking and considering us. But with that, there are two other organizations that I want to plug. I want to make sure that we identify that there are other alternatives to Reclaiming the Republic and Republic Review. Get involved with the Constitution Club at theconstitutionclub.ning.com. Get those guys, you know, moving. Because they have an online presence, get with them and start supporting the rescinding of the 17th Amendment. I go through this quite a bit. ConstitutionClub.ning.com. Go sign up. It's free as far as I know. I've been telling Keith he needs to start, you know, charging, but he hasn't done that yet. The folks over at Our First Right, they're trying to change the makeup of Congress from a capped 435 to actually ensuring that every 50,000 folks are represented. I would love to see the swamp drained by both the rescinding of the 17th Amendment with the Constitution Club, as well as Our First Right passing and getting our representation back down to a manageable number. Especially today, there's no excuse for it. We have the technology. You should listen to that interview that I gave with Aaron Lee Williams. So let me kind of move on. Again, thank you for tuning in. There is no sign in the news. If you go and look, you will see no sign in the news today that is, you know, announcing that the federal government is disbanding any of its unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. So that means that you and I are going to have to face this. We need to actually step in and get involved. If not, then I don't know. I'm at a complete loss here, folks, because if we don't step in, it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of time till these indolent dolts surrender our liberties so that they have a democracy to destroy us. And that is what happens every time when countries and people and government moves and shifts towards a democracy, because the next thing you know is we will be susceptible to a tyrant, a despot, and we will be thrown back and forth from anarchy to despotism. And that's exactly what the framers warned us of. And that's why they created a system that couldn't get there. And if we don't do something about it and use the Constitution to save us, they're going to get there, and they're not going to care about the Constitution. They won't care about you. And I'd hate to go down that path of, you know, some of the things that always happen when these types of revolutions occur. There's a lot of death and carnage because they don't want to have to deal with people that don't want to tote the line that they want them to tote. Either you tote the line or they get rid of you. And they do it systematically. They don't do a broad brush sweeping. Everybody in all of these classes, we're gone. No, just like what they did in Germany, they do it systematically. And just like what they did with the Khmer Rouge, just like what they did in every single communist revolution, they get rid of people systematically. So Let me dive in. I've got just a little over a minute, but I'm going to get started anyway. And here is your long-awaited tribute. I think I gave the family and everybody enough time to, you know, mourn, cool off, and everything else. Bush, as you know, was born June 12th. And I want to say it was 1928, something like that. I know that he joined the Navy on his 18th birthday. So, no, it was 24. It was 1924. So Bush joined the Navy on his 18th birthday, which was June 12th, 1941. And that was right after, less than a year after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. When he served for 3 years. And as soon as the war was over, he got out. So he served a little over 3 years. I think he got out in September of 45. After that, he then went to the prestigious Ivy League school, Yale University, and while he was there, he became a member of the Skull and Bones Club and graduated in 1948. If you're doing the math, he graduated from a four-year school in 3 years. He entered the oil business, moving to West Texas, and was a millionaire by 1964. So by the time he was in his before he hit 40, he was a known millionaire in oil. And so how would you like that? Get out of the Navy and go into Yale and then become a millionaire. I guess those Ivy League degrees really drive something. But actually, it wasn't like he went and got a job and... I'll get into all of this. I'm going to run out of time like I usually do. So we'll be right back after this. Please hang on. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so, as I was just saying, that Bush, if you start adding it all up, it was almost like he was on this, you know, those escalators, but they're not really escalators. They're walkways at the airport that they, you know, help you move along at a much faster clip. And if you keep walking, you can get up there faster than 20 miles an hour. So when you come off those things, you can feel that that kinetic energy, that force that is, you know, your body, you know, all of a sudden slowing down or stopping from that walkway. But anyway, it seems like, and I'm going to get into this, I'm just, you know, just kind of glossing over his life first off, but there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, that it wasn't a coincidence that he, you know, went into the Navy and then went into Yale and then went into, you know, the oil business and so forth. So let's just kind of move a little bit further down. But like I said, by the time he was 40 years old in 1964, he was a good, solid, hardcore millionaire. Now, Bush had some failures. Most people say, oh, he never, you know, he never held an office before president. And that's not true. He ran for office in 1964 as a millionaire, but failed in his campaign, and he failed miserably. But 2 years later, in 1966, he became the representative of the 7th Congressional District of Texas. So he became a representative in the House of Representatives. However, he was unseated in 1970. And so, when he was unseated in 1970, Nixon reaches down and appoints him to become the ambassador of the UN. Now, I'm not sure why Nixon just reached down and grabbed this, you know, this war vet and served, you know, 2 terms in Congress to become the ambassador to the United Nations. Like Haley, you know, Governor Haley, who, you know, had some real credentials in getting out there as a real leader, but that wasn't Bush. That was not Bush. Bush was not the real leader of ideas and a great articulator. At least I didn't see it, and I never saw the evidence there. As a matter of fact, my parents, who I used to sit, my father got a degree in political science, which means he's a political junkie, which means he loves and read Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, all of that stuff, all the different philosophers, as well as politics. I mean, he had a pretty extensive library. He was the one that actually helped me and insisted that I include, and he passed away before my book was finished, so I couldn't get his input on section one. But the point is that he drove a lot of how these philosophies matured, baked over time, and helped me see the fact that there's really only 2 philosophies in government and in the man's philosophical realm. There is the philosophy of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that you have control and you need to maintain that control in governments and so forth. And then there is the philosophy of subjugation, that there's the elite that have to control people, just like Plato's Republic, and everybody else is a part of the game, but they have a play, you know, or they have a part to play. They're a teacher or what have you. Anyway, I'm going down a rat hole, so let me back out of this real quick. The fact of the matter is that there are really only 2 points in the horizontal plane of philosophy. It is liberty, and then there is subjugation. There are just different stages in between where you've given up some liberty, but you're not fully subjugated, and so forth. And you're just swinging from one end of the spectrum, from, you know, from the white side of liberty to the black side of subjugation and slavery. Anyway, so Nixon was appointed as the ambassador, and then all of a sudden, Nixon gets unseated in, what, 72 in the presidential election, or right after that in 73, because I believe it was Ford that appointed Nixon to become the chair of the RNC. It seemed like he was just on this, you know, the yellow brick road in politics because, you know, he only served 2 terms, then became the ambassador to the UN, then became the chair to the RNC. And then in 74, after he sat at the helm of the RNC and got a good exposure to the names and players of the Republican committee, all of a sudden, he gets appointed to become the chief liaison officer in China. And then later that year, he was made, I believe it was that year, he became the director of Central Intelligence. I mean, that's a huge jump for somebody that's never supposedly worked in the intelligence community to all of a sudden becoming the DCI. Are you kidding me? So there was a researcher and author, and his name was Russ Baker, and he actually starts putting some things together. And there was another author that I'll tell you about, but Baker was the one that asserted that Bush became a CIA agent while he was serving in World War II, because this was the beginning of the CIA. And Baker finds H.W. Bush and his father, Prescott Bush, along with Lyndon B. Johnson, then vice president, and the CIA director, Alan Dulles, at the center of a plot to assassinate John F. Kennedy. Now, is this not smacks of conspiracy? However, Baker actually does the research to kind of, you know, put things together, and there's a pretty good bread trail crumb. Baker asserts that while George H.W. Bush was at Phillips Academy from 38 to 42, his roommate was the nephew of George D., and I'm going to really, you know, assassinate this name, but it's Mohrenschild, anyway, Mohrenschildt. And that in the later years, Bush and D. Mohrenschild fraternized in Dallas. And guess who comes to Dallas in 62, where Mohrenschild had already befriended Lee Harvey Oswald. And so Baker makes this connection between the Bushes and Oswald and this Mohrenschild, and lays down a pretty good theory that Bush was involved in that plot. Now, there are still documents that Trump has not released, but we know that there's already been enough to say, hey, they knew, the intelligence agencies knew that this was going to go down, that this wasn't just a serendipitous opportunity that Oswald on his own concocted. And so Baker also makes the connection between the Bushes and the Watergate scandal. Now, where was he during the Watergate scandal? Now, 1972, that's when the break-in, right? It was during the presidential campaign when they broke into the Watergate apartment. And G. Gordon Liddy was a part of this. And I'd love to hear G. Gordon Liddy's side of this. I don't know if he's still active on the radio and so forth, but I'd love to hear his side of this. He actually served time. And so he may have been the odd man out of not really knowing what's going on. But Baker describes Watergate not as a ham-hand act of political espionage, but actually a carefully orchestrated farce designed to take down Richard Nixon. Now, there's another, and as a matter of fact, there's some real connections to Watergate and this collusion, because it's all about the presidential race and how something occurred that, see, the president didn't break any laws. Nixon didn't break any laws. He just lied to Congress about the existence of a conversation on some tapes. And that's what impeached him. Those were his high crimes and misdemeanors. He lied to Congress because he found out about it. It's not, and he tried to cover it up instead of being honest. And that's why he was impeached. They got rid of him for Gerald Ford. Now, Gerald Ford was a huge globalist, and he was the host of the World Forum in 1984, who had ex-Chancellor Schmidt and all sorts of these big players. And a big player that was there was Henry Kissinger. All of these guys that were these big globalists, Nixon being one of them as well, Ford being another one, all of these guys were pursuing and pushing and setting up this new world order. These GATS, NAFTAs, and those types of trade and treaties to allow corporations to become so dominant in maintaining such a level of profitability that they had all the money to use against us as they continued to steal our wealth. So anyway, there's this other author that gets into the research of George H.W. Bush, and his name's Tex Mars. And he actually speaks into the details of George Bush's involvement in the Skull and Bones Club and his politics and being very close to events for one to scoff at mere coincidences. And that's what I'm telling you here, folks. When you start looking at the different research and you start finding, well, wow, Bush was there in Dallas in 62 when Kennedy got killed. Is that a coincidence? It must have been. For me, this is what I know, and because there's some really good research done, but having not seen the documents, the veracity of these things, I can't necessarily say. I've even heard some pretty outlandish things that Bush was a baked baby. And if you know what a baked baby is, it was a part of an evil seance type of thing that, you know, when his mother was, when he was conceived. Anyway. Let me get back. As soon as we get back, I'm going to give you my take on how I saw Bush as I started looking in hindsight of this New World Order and so forth. So we'll be back with my perspective as soon as we come back. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so for me, this is what I know and this is what I remember, because I don't really remember any of the details. Like I said, Bush came out of nowhere. It's not like my father in the 70s was talking about this George Bush, this ambassador to the UN. I mean, these were just short little stints, but they were big level jumps for him. And so what I do know, because I was working and my career in the intelligence community began in the early 80s. And I remember the Gulf War, and I remember some of the details. I actually have a letter of appreciation. I voted for Bush. I voted for him twice, both when he won and when he lost. Now, there's a lot of people that talk about his campaign and everything else, and I'm not going to go there. But what I am going to talk about is the Gulf War itself. Did Saddam Hussein go into Iraq? Yes, he did. Did we all of a sudden overreact and go into Iraq to free the world type of thing and create this world coalition? Yeah, we did. there was a lot of perspectives of the UN, weapons of mass destruction, and so forth. I will say this, because I do remember vividly that Saddam Hussein refused. I mean, all the way up to the D-Day, the D-moment when we invaded Iraq with Saddam Hussein and when he went into hiding, that he had, it was up to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein could have allowed the UN inspectors to come in and it would have been done and over. We would have started withdrawing troops and getting him to cooperate. But Saddam Hussein was convinced that Kuwait. So Kuwait was horizontally drilling into his wells. They weren't drilling down because it was a small little country. They didn't have access to these big, huge reserves that were underneath Iraq. So he knew that they were horizontally drilling. So he took military action. In a world that wants to assert diplomacy, that military action is not a good thing to do, all Saddam Hussein needed to do to call the dogs of war off was to allow the UNs to come in because supposedly he had all these weapons of mass destruction. His son used the exact same dialogue. Not that those things didn't exist, not that Saddam Hussein wasn't pursuing those types of things. He did have chemical weapons. That's a proven thing. So this Gulf War that we went into, a lot of people like to say that, you know, this was all Bush doing, and actually it had more to do with Saddam Hussein, and maybe they knew Saddam Hussein would not back down. They probably knew that he thought he was in a position where he could take advantage, and he didn't. So we went in, and when we won, we allowed, you know, that's when these guys started going in, the UN inspectors and US inspectors and so forth. And over time, they just kind of let things go, and the U.S. left everything to the U.N., and it set up the second Gulf War. The fact of the matter is whether the Gulf War was a consequence or whether it was a coincidence or just an outcome, it doesn't really matter. But to me, what really mattered was the second term of the Bush presidency. It didn't happen. Bush should have won. Bush was the overwhelming candidate. He was the overwhelming victor based on popularity, period. What was the percentage of the popular vote that Clinton ended up getting when he won his first presidency? 39%. This is where Ross Perot comes in to help fractionalize the conservatives. This was a play that was a redo of the 1906 election with Taft and Roosevelt to get Wilson in. Wilson was the huge progressive that was going to move America in a direction that America should never have moved. All unconstitutional, but nevertheless a direction that we were not, that was bad for us, period. And so there's no doubt in my mind that Bush handed Clinton the presidency. If you remember his reelection campaign, the only thing he really did that I remember was he got on a train and went through a few states, and that was the only campaign. And it's not like he traveled around the country. He did hardly anything to actually try to win. And even though he was downplaying his presidency because there was this war and all these things were happening in 92. And so I'm going, wow, you got to be kidding me. It's like he's not even trying. And then with Ross Perot coming in the ring, you know, he was cleaning everybody's clock. Ross Perot seemed like the most viable candidate. And that was the ploy. He handed over the presidency because they knew that Ross Perot could not get enough of the establishment Republicans. That was the beginning of, and you got to remember what happened in 1991. That was the beginning of the Constitution Party because people recognized that Bush had completely abandoned, and the Republicans seemed to have completely abandoned the Constitution. So in the 92 election, the libertarians and the independents and so forth, who predominantly vote Republican, chose to vote for Ross Perot. And Ross Perot ended up getting double digits of percentage of the popular vote. Bush lost the presidency to Clinton, who only won 39%. It was 39% of the popular vote. And so I'm trying to, you know, help cast this imagery for you to basically say, why is it that Bush rolled over? Why would he not want to have a second presidency? It's easy, folks. We had a Democratic Congress, and Bush was a Republican president. And the one thing that he needed was he needed to change the playing field of trade. And one of the things that Bush was doing was he, and I'll get into it, you know, a little bit after this, but the fact of the matter is they knew that they needed a Democratic president to present the NAFTA deal. And they needed an idiot to basically, you know, go up against the Democrats. And that was Ross Perot to the rescue once again. And Ross Perot, this most articulate guy that made, that cleaned everybody's clock and was the most viable candidate in 1992, talked and looked like an idiot in 1993 when they were voting and presenting NAFTA. NAFTA passed, if you remember, in the middle of the night. Next thing you know, America's wealth starts transferring now even more to other nations, and we start really suffering economically. However, we didn't really immediately start suffering. Everything was set up for later, and that later came in 2000, because you got to remember, at the end of Bill Clinton's presidency is when we had a major recession. So let me kind of now move this down this whole path that you needed to have the Democratic president to get this NAFTA deal pushed through to lead the charge while he had a Democratic Congress. What ends up happening is you get the party, the contrary party that you wouldn't think would be doing this, all of a sudden championing something of the other side. We're seeing this today. We're seeing Trump championing the Obamacare, or I should say socialized health care, that the Republicans are going to do this, just like the Democrats gave us the free trade of the world. This is all the sham. So as soon as he stepped out of office and Clinton took over, Clinton got the, you know, NAFTA, and all that history is out there. But as soon as Bush left office, he went on a whirlwind, and it was literally a worldwide whirlwind tour, speaking engagements where he mentioned this concept of the New World Order, you know, and bragging about how countries would be able to have free trade and all of these things, the 1,000 points of light, all of that. And he literally mentioned the New World Order hundreds of times. And how do I know? Because all of these different communication cables were coming in around the world from Phibus and so forth. And Phibus is like Foreign Broadcasting Intelligence Service, where they take the manuscripts. And they were actually picking up all of these talks and conversations that Bush was having in these elite forums and in front of these people and classes and people around the world, talking about the New World Order. And it started getting back home, and people, you know, started clinging on to this, and everybody was putting two and two together, this whole new, you know, conspiracy theory. And this was the beginning of the media starting to actually decry and actually go after people. Anybody that talked about a conspiracy, a New World Order, and those types of things, they quickly delegitimized them as radicals. These guys were wackos. And they created a stigma that whenever they put the label of a conspiracy theorist on somebody, that person was, you know, can't be trusted. You cannot rely upon any viable intelligence from this person because they're just a complete wacko. And that's how effective the mainstream media and the rest of the education, academia, and so forth was in changing the sentiments of America. So all of these people that were pointing to this New World Order conspiracy Well, there was a lot more to it than just what was going on. We missed one big, huge thing that Bush had done to us during his presidency. I wonder what that was. You're going to have to wait because, as you can tell, I'm at a hard break. So we're going to get to the one thing that was, I believe, it was the real critical kill point and blow to America. So we'll be back right after this, and I'll tell you what it was. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So, in the nutshell, my assessment kind of aligned with Tex Mars. I thought Tex Mars' book, The Dark Majestic, or Dark Majesty, and it's a very good book. I'd highly recommend you read it. I think he kind of gets to a point, though, in his book where it seems like he's grinding more of a personal axe. Now, Tex Mars was from Texas, so he knew Bush pretty well. Or I should say he knew about Bush pretty well. And so, you know, he really exposed Bush and all the evils of Bush. But his assessment was that there was a very special meeting with, I believe it was the Rockefellers, and Clinton and Bush, and I believe it was either Kitty Bunkport or it was in Paris. I think there were two total meetings, but it was after those meetings that Bush and his rhetoric and his campaigning went to nothing, and that's when he did his goodbye tour, as far as I was concerned, on that train in his candidacy, and you saw the ramping up of rhetoric coming from Ross Perot. And so to me, there was, I just didn't doubt the fact that he completely rolled over. And I believe that there was a deal made. And I think Tex Mars even asserted that there was this deal made that after Clinton's presidency, his son would win. And then possibly Hillary would win, you know, the following election. And it was set up that way. But another guy who had this other royal blood of progressivism, not true royalty, but obviously he was prepared by the progressives and so forth, that Obama, you know, become a president, because there's all with Bill Ayers and everything that has come out prior to, even during and after Obama's presidency, there's no doubt he was probably the most corrupt president we have ever had. I don't know if he was the most evil. I think Wilson was pretty doggone evil in some of the things that he did. I think FDR was pretty doggone evil, and Obama was pretty doggone evil. It's not like he was a nice guy. He was an evil man. However, the fact of the matter is, when it comes to Bush, he rolled over, and it was more about this world globalist agenda. So there's one thing that didn't really come out until after his presidency, because it wasn't until 92, during his re-election year, where he comes out of Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in 1992, with a treaty where he signed up America to this summit. And it basically, this summit was the Earth Summit, which is a UN conference on environment and development that was held down in Brazil, like I said. And he comes back signing America up to a treaty that was never ratified by two-thirds of the Senate. So nobody really knew about what the heck he signed this up for. And nobody ever stood up and said, no, we're not going to do this. This is the thing that really stinks in Denmark. And this is the thing that I have been poking at all of the news, even Fox News, and all of the legitimate news out there, because they're not talking about it. And that's the Agenda 21. Bush was the guy that signed up America to this movement that would push us towards global governance. The primary goal of Agenda 21, and the 21 means the 21st century. This was the globalist agenda for the 21st century. The new concept was 2030. It's the Agenda 2030. And that means that they need to have us moved, prepared, and in a position by 2030 for them to do what they need to do. So, as they are moving us, what are some of the objectives? Some of the primary goals of Agenda 21 and 2030 are to remove your property rights. One of the things that they're doing is they're making your homesteads worthless by taking away your water rights, by taking away your access rights, by taking away your throughfare of commerce rights, because they're going to start making, you know, travel more and more difficult by inserting roundabouts. Then they're going to start actually tolling. They're going to make it hard to impossible for anybody to thrive in the rural areas, that only the elitist will be able to maintain themselves in these rural areas. So they're going to buy up this worthless land, because what happens if nobody can sell their property because nobody wants to buy it? Well, then it gets sold to the lowest or the highest bidder, but it gets sold at a rock bottom price. And if you understand what's going on, they're already doing this. The Hearst decision in Washington State and in California and throughout most of the states, they're all either denying you access to your underground water to be able to drill your own wells. And if you're going to have a farm, you need a well. Farmlands in California depend on the well, because they have been cutting people off. And so they're taking away the well water, and they're taking away access to the San Joaquin Valley and that delta, because the delta smelt in California. People, that one of the real reasons why we're not growing food and why we're having to buy food from other countries that is subpar. Do you like eating blueberries that don't taste like blueberries? They just taste like nothing, because they're genetically modified, and they don't have to tell us that, because they're not grown, packed, and everything else under federal regulations. And the fact is, we're bringing in dairy products and all sorts of products that we have more than the ability to grow here. It's not like we have a real water shortage. This is all pushing us in a direction so that we will no longer be able to develop wealth. And they are pushing us in this direction for one reason and one reason alone. It is subjugation. The leadership, there is no doubt that the leadership is the, you know, people like Soros, Gates, Bezos, all of these elitist billionaires, And there are plenty of billionaires that are around the world from India, Mexico, and so forth. These people are the main players, and these are obscenely rich players. And I'm not knocking anybody that is obscenely rich, but it just so happens that they all seem to get on board with this elitist concept with the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, and all of these other organizations that say we need to be moving in these directions. This is a movement in transitioning mankind into chattel or serfs, if you understand what I mean. We're basically becoming servants to the elitists. And that's our responsibility. That's our goal. That's what they want to do. That's the direction they want to move us in. And in a big way, this is fulfilling the concept of the Georgia Guidestones. Because a big part of this is all tied to climate change. A big part of this is getting us to accept a new founded religion based on planet Earth. And if you remember the whole ecology movement and everything else, remember I played that song. I might get it and play it this week. It was by the Edgar Winter Group, White Trash, and it was a gospel type of song. Save our planet. Who will save our planet? And it was done to like gospel type music. And they weren't the only ones. There were a lot of other bands that were really promoting and pushing that type of a religious perspective on ecology. And that was way back in the late 60s, early 70s. Look, why didn't they have Oso the Communist back then say, we're going to die in 12 years? Because there's no evidence. There is absolutely no evidence. And so one of the things that I do have to get into is some of what I would say G. Edward Griffin's need-to-know news. But there's some other things. And so let me just kind of close on this segment with this final comment on Bush. Bush was not a good man. What he ended up giving us in his final year of his presidency was almost the death sentence and the death nail to seal our coffin shut. If we don't start waking up, and I'm saying this because this is happening in your own community. Go to your county commissioners' meetings and start looking at who's involved in writing regulations and rules, and why the heck are you losing your property rights, and why are they not standing up, and what the heck is going on? This is happening in red states, blue states. They are everywhere. I've pointed you to the Planners Network. There's no doubt in my mind, my friends, that there is a huge conspiracy, and they're all working it to convince us that we need to become chattel, that we need to just surrender and go live in these beautiful concrete buildings in the city and give up our cars so that we don't have, they'll move us around and they'll make sure we have a job. Don't worry. Even if we don't have a job, they'll give us a living wage for doing nothing, so that you can survive and everything else. What will happen to the Antifa? What will happen to all these other groups that will just be killed and be done away with because they've served their purpose? I am hoping and praying that you can wake up, that you can start seeing. Don't just take my word for it. Look into Agenda 21. This is a globalist scale conspiracy that is driving government in a direction to moving you to chattel and or serfs, enslaving you for the rest of your life and your children and their posterity. If you want to save liberty, if you want to save your liberty, if you want to save your sovereignty, you have to start taking actions. GR can't do it by himself. GR is reclaiming the Republic. We are reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless, and I'll be back tomorrow. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.